This podcast is part of the Deluxe Edition Network. To find other great shows on the network, head over to deluxeeditionnetwork.com. That's deluxeeditionnetwork.com.
What is going on, and welcome to Take on the World with
Nathan Blades
and Mike D with another Take on the World Nerdcast.
All right, here we are once again.
So now, when I was in high school,
yeah,
all those years and years and years ago,
10 billion,
I took computer programming.
Oh, really? So did I.
I know. And you are currently in programming classes.
Yes, I am currently still taking programming classes.
So I thought, hey, what a better topic than to take a little step back in time and look at a movie that encompassed two of our nerd characteristics.
Oh, what movie could possibly encompass both of us? What movie?
Well, we won't get there yet.
Ah, okay.
You're playing Johnny Jump Ahead.
All right, all right.
And that gets a...
I'm going to smash that thing.
So, you know, even when I went to school, computer nerds, geeks were considered nerds and geeks.
All right, all right.
But I don't care because I love it.
Well, yeah, obviously, like, we are clearly superior.
Yes, absolutely. So, there was a movie in 1995.
Okay, okay.
A movie that was about teenage hackers.
Teenage hackers? A movie about teenage hackers?
Do you know what the name of the movie was?
Oh, no, I have absolutely no idea what the name of this movie could be.
The name of this movie was Hackers.
No way, that's the... Genius.
Anyway, I wanted you to watch this movie, and I didn't realize you had seen it.
Yes, I had seen it either freshman or sophomore year of high school. In class, mind you.
That's great, because whoever your teacher was an awesome teacher.
Oh, they were fantastic.
So, 1995, you know, I was a little beyond high school, I was a little past, but my programming, but the premise of this movie starts back a little bit earlier than that, when the main character was 11 years old.
Yeah.
And that was 1988.
Good old 88. I wasn't around for that. I don't know if it was a good year or not.
So 1988 is the year I graduated.
Oh, it was clearly a good year getting out of high school.
So his early escapades were 84, 85, 86, 87, 88, and around there. I don't know when he first got on his computer, but computers were relatively new back then. The technology was new.
Yeah.
It is nowhere near what it is today.
Oh, certainly not.
Nobody thought that every household in the country would have not only a regular computer, but a handheld walking, talking computer in your hand.
Oh, don't even get me started on computers.
The technology or computers in general?
Well, technology and computer. They're just everywhere. They're in everything, from our fridges, trash cans.
Yeah.
Everything.
Like my refrigerator will tell me if the door's open when I'm at work.
Yeah, sometimes I leave it on purpose.
So, yeah. And I have to text them, why is the door to my fridge open?
Oh, well, a little warm in the house. Figured I'd chill out the house.
Yeah, that's great. We're not heating the outside. We're not cooling the inside.
Oh, well.
That's the Gen X parents. Our parents from Gen X would, if you open a door in the middle of winter,
we're not heating the outside.
And you think just the Gen X parents? Because I hate to break it to you. But you do it too.
I know. I'm a Gen X parent now. So we were taught that, so we passed that on. And hopefully one day you'll be yelling at your kids like that.
Probably. Because, I mean, with everything the way it is now.
No hoverboards in the house!
How many times do I have to tell you? Take your hollow ball outside.
Get off my lawn.
Right. I just downloaded that PNG of my lawn.
So what are you drinking there, bud?
Oh, so small. Well, just a little small serving size.
Nobody judges, brother.
Coke limited edition move.
And what is it? What does it taste like? Moving?
No, transformation flavored.
Okay.
All it's right. I was very curious. It reminded me of the Starlight in the Dream flavor.
Okay.
And I looked it up online, and it's a combination of those flavors. And there was a third one. I'm pretty sure it was just normal Coke vanilla.
Okay.
But I know it's a combination of Starlight and the Dreams. And it's not my favorite, but it's the closest thing I'm going to get to Starlight ever again.
I have a Hidden River Brewing Company Extra Extra Lava Channel Triple India Pale Ale.
Wow, all fancy.
Delicioso. So, now that we're past that. So let's talk about hackers.
All right.
So I wanted to get your take on it being a Gen Z.
Yes, yes.
And compared to my take on it being a Gen X, to see how this movie stood the test of time in several different capacities.
Okay.
The effects and the visuals and the quote technology that's in the movie.
What do you mean quote technology? It's super realistic.
Okay, so a little bit about the movie itself.
Okay.
The movie was Hackers, came out in 1995. It was starring Johnny Lee Miller, and a funny story about Johnny Lee Miller. So there was a show on CBS called Elementary.
Yeah.
And it was a modern take on Sherlock Holmes.
Yes, I remember it vaguely.
So the main character was Sherlock Holmes.
No way.
So I'm watching this and I'm like, man, where do I know this dude from? Like, because this is what, 30 years after that? Yeah, like.
I have no idea.
Let's see. 2005, that's 10, 2015, that's 20. So let's just say 20 years after this movie.
Oh, okay.
So I'm looking at this dude. I'm like, I know him, but I can't put my finger on it. So then, I don't know, the show ran its course.
All right.
And one day I'm flipping through and Hackers is on and I see it on. I got to watch it. So I, the first scene when Johnny Lee Miller came on, I'm like, holy shit, that's Sherlock from Elementary. As a young kid.
Yeah.
And I was amazed because he looks like him, but he's so young in the movie. So the other person who's in this movie, well, Johnny Lee Miller plays Dade Murphy, who is also known as Zero Cool, who is also known as
Crash Override.
Yeah. Angelina Jolie in her third credited movie.
She's so young in this movie.
I know, she's so young. She's aka Acid Burn. Fisher Stevens, who always plays kind of a douche in movies.
Yeah, no, I didn't make the connection in my head that was Fisher Stevens until you said he's the jerk in every movie.
Yeah, he's a jerk.
And then I'm like, oh my god, that's the guy.
He plays a good jerk. So he is this computer corporate security officer, Eugene Belford, but he says, don't call me Eugene. Call me the plague.
The plague.
Now, this Matthew Lillard, he's not listed as like a main character on the credits. I don't know why, because I like this dude.
No, he does a really nice job in this movie.
But he kind of always plays that same part. He's Emmanuel Goldstein, aka serial killer. And these were all their hacker handles.
Yeah.
But he was also one of the main characters in the Scream movie.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. I'm getting woozy here.
Oh, that was him. Oh, my God. Yeah.
So it was fun you know, seeing these guys young in this movie. Now, I watched this movie in 95.
Yeah.
And now I've watched it probably 100 times since.
Sure.
This movie and Gleaming the Cube. I watched both of those movies a lot. Because I was into computers and I was into skateboarding. I was into punk rock music.
Who wasn't then?
Your mom.
Oh. Huh. I wonder how that worked out.
Well, if you don't like punk rock. So also noted in this movie is Penn Jillette of Penn and Teller fame.
Yeah.
Which I didn't know who he was back then. But coming forward, I see him in a movie. I'm like, I can't believe that's Penn Jillette. So he also plays a computer security officer of some sort. And his nickname is, or his name is Hal. No nickname, no hacker handle, no nothing.
If I remember, he's not in it that much.
Nah, a couple scenes, that's it.
Yeah.
So this was written by Raphael Moreau.
And that's how I'd guess to pronounce it.
He's only got two writing credits.
Only two?
Yeah. And I'm surprised because the writing of this movie wasn't the best, but it did tell a story.
Well,
and when I read the background on what he wrote and how he wrote it, I kind of appreciate a little bit more. So let me go over this with you.
Okay.
And then let me know if it changes anything with the way the movie transpired for you.
Okay. Okay.
So he also wrote Carrie 2, The Rage in 1999. But Maru in an interview said to call hackers a counterculture makes it sounds like they're a transitionary thing. I think they are the next step in human evolution. So I think he meant human social evolution.
Probably.
He originally wrote the script on the hacker subculture. It was not this movie at first.
Okay.
So he had interest in hacking since the early 80s.
All right.
As many of us at that time did. When he was researching it, he met with a hacker, Fiber Optic, a.k.a. Mark Abeen.
Okay.
Who was 22 at the time. And he was also in jail in 1994 on hacking charges.
Huh.
He also met a couple other young hackers who said they were being harassed by the government. He listened to their stories, and he fits some of those story concepts into this script. And this is the movie you got from it.
Oh, so that's kind of where
the one of the people he talked to did the coin hack.
Yeah.
So that made it into the movie.
Yeah.
So back then there were payphones everywhere, and there was in the beginning of the payphones, all you needed was the touch tones.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not even about the touch tones for the call. It's about the drop of the coin. So what they said is you record the drop of the coin, drop $5 worth of coins into the phone.
Yeah.
Don't make a call. Just press eject. It comes back out, but you record it. And then when you pick up the ringer, you just play that sound. And supposedly, now, I don't know if that ever worked.
If that trick didn't work, I know of a trick that could have been based on. Now, this is from a completely different movie. That it was shown in Pirates of Silicon Valley, another computer movie. They showed it off in that movie where I think it was Captain Crunch, some kid's cereal, you could get little whistles in your cereal box, was your toy. That whistle made the correct tone that would let you get a free call on your phone. It made the...
Okay.
I can't remember what the tone was called.
I don't either.
But it let you get free calls on your payphones. And
well, I remember the payphones because that's what we had then. We didn't have cell phones. So if you made a long distance call, you got to a certain point, the operator would come on and say, you need to drop another 50 cents to continue on your call. And you would drop the 50 cents in. And I always wondered, how the fuck did they know I put 50 cents in?
So
because it goes by the sound. So I'm thinking that hack might work. I don't know.
Yeah, if it's based on the sound, I'd imagine that would work. And that's very tricky that works.
I would think it would. I thought it would work like a vending machine.
So did I.
Kind of, it weighs the coin and the size. You know, it goes down, it goes into a slot of that size. And then it weighs the coin to make sure it's the right density for whatever country you're in.
Yeah, that's what I assumed it would be, and it just.
But I guess not. So anyway, he took that story and he interjected it into his script, and this is the movie he got from that.
Okay.
So it was directed by Ian Softley. He has a bunch of directing credits, 10 of them, including TV. The most notable was K-Pax and Skeleton Key.
Okay.
So I've seen both of those movies. I don't really remember what Skeleton Key was about. I know I saw it, though.
I recognize the names, but I can't say that I've seen
it. K-Pax was kind of like an alien type something or other.
Okay.
So so the budget for this movie was $20 million. It only earned $7.5 million at the box office. Yeesh. And I think almost half of that was its opening weekend.
Aish.
It was released on September 15th, 1995. It opened in 1,812 theaters. It earned $2.3 million its opening weekend, finished fourth place for its opening weekend, which isn't bad. But then the film ended its domestic run with a box office of $7.5 million, which it's a huge loss. So,
yeah.
So financially, it was a flop. Other movies that were released in September of 95 that it was competing against, Bridges of Madison County.
Okay.
Halloween, The Curse of Michael Myers, which is the sixth Halloween film. I don't know why I have six Halloween food there.
Halloween food. I sure do love the flavor of Michael Myers.
The Big Green, which was a kid's soccer movie.
Okay.
Full Body and Piranha.
I feel like I've seen some of those, but I'm not.
Well, I've seen Bridges of Madison County. That's Clint Eastwood.
Okay.
Of course, I've seen Michael Myers because it's a Halloween film, and I didn't particularly like this one. Me and Rob went to the theater to see it.
Okay.
The cast prior to filming spent about 3 weeks together learning how to type, learning how to rollerblade, getting to know each other.
So the rollerblading and typing in the movie wasn't, well, specifically the typing, that wasn't just sped up. They actually learned to.
Well, they did learn to type. I don't know if they sped it up.
Okay.
There was probably some trickery in there. Because at points they're going pretty hard and heavy, and they learn that in just 3 weeks.
Yeah, that is fair. That you can definitely learn to type at a good pace in 3 weeks, but maybe not necessarily that pace.
So they met with actual hackers so they could get, you know, the culture and everything. And one of those
hacker culture.
One of those hackers became a technical advisor on the movie. So Johnny Lee Miller also went to a hacker's convention to gather more insight for the part.
Mm-hmm.
So it was filmed in mostly the New York area, Tribeca, Battery Park City, the East Village. And the nightclub scenes were filmed at Brentford Public Baths in London, outside of London.
What an odd.
Well, it's not odd because in that time, London had a huge punk rock scene.
Oh, okay. That makes a little bit more sense. I was going to say, what an odd place.
I mean, by 94, punk rock had kind of filtered out in the United States, except for us hardcores. But in Great Britain, it was still pretty popular style of music. And they were sketching the line from punk rock to hip hop almost. Because you had the dance club music, the techno music coming out at that time.
Okay.
So that was a big thing there. The critical response on Rotten Tomatoes, it got a 31%.
Ooh, only a 31.
Yeah, I don't understand the Rotten Tomatoes scoring.
Oh, neither do I really. I just know, high number, good.
critics liked the stylish visuals, but criticized the look of the hackers and their subculture was unconvincing.
I mean, I'll give them, it was maybe a little bit cheesy, but I think to me, I feel like it's a little bit cheesy because of the culture that I've grown up in, because vastly different.
Well, the way they were dressing was very early 90s, late 80s.
Okay.
With the, everything had straps on it. Everything had straps hanging off. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Can we just go off track a little bit?
Go ahead.
Straps. Why straps? Why straps?
I don't know. Parachute pants were a huge thing back then. And you'd wear parachute pants and suspenders. You let your suspenders hang down. That was, I don't know.
Okay.
Who knows why fashion goes the way it goes?
Okay, valid point.
Yeah, I'll never be doing a fashion show.
I mean, have you seen me?
You're a fashion icon, dude.
Thank you.
So that's what I have on the background in the movie. So basically, we can get into talking about the movie. We'll give the basic plot. Corporate greed.
Yeah.
And they needed a scapegoat, so they were going to blame these teenage hackers for mm-hmm. some bad stuff that was going to happen. So I want to get your Gen Z take on the movie. First, I want to know, what did you think of it visually?
Oh, well, visually, it's super realistic and accurate to what it is really like to program and hack. 100% absolutely guarantee.
That's more the technical side of it. Okay. I'm talking about the film side.
Okay.
They took, okay, I know what you're saying, sarcastically as it was. They took liberties in showing how the hacking and the internet looked, because a lot of people didn't know what it looked like back then.
That's fair.
Here's a good story. You know the Matrix screen, right?
Yes.
Okay. So back then, a friend of mine got a computer, and he knew I knew computers. Mm-hmm. So he said, "Hey, can you come help me set this up?" I'm like, "Sure." So I had a screensaver that was the Matrix. So I hooked his computer up, and I told him, "Okay, I'm gonna put you on an internet now." And I started the screensaver, and I said, "There you go." And he's like, What's that? I said, "That's the internet, dude." And he's like, "How am I supposed to?" I said, "After you look at it for a while, things just pop. Like, you'll see it." So he sat down in front of it. I let him go for about 2 or 3 minutes.
Oh my God.
And I'm like, "Dude, that's just a screensaver. I'm just fucking with you."
Oh,
he goes, "You're a dick."
I would have done the exact same thing. If I had a friend who knew absolutely nothing about computers, nothing, and they asked me, I would do the exact same thing. That is so funny.
It was funny. So I get what you're saying. Like, they showed stuff that it's completely unrealistic, but I'm talking about how it looked visually as an art piece.
Okay.
Without being sarcastic,
I'm going to give you the generic Gen Z answer, and then I'm going to give you my genuine answer.
Okay.
So the Gen Z answer looks kind of bad. Looks old.
Okay.
Like, the visuals are cheesy.
Okay.
Now, that aside, yes, they have aged. Everything's going to age eventually. But the creativity and the imagination that they put into creating the visuals was actually really cool. It was cool, very captivating, the way that they did the visuals when they're going in looking for the data, or when they're sending all the, when they're dealing with all the viruses, like the way that they visualized that was actually pretty cool.
Okay. I always thought the same thing. I liked the way they filmed some of the scenes, particularly when they were in Grand Central Station towards yes. the end, and it was Hack the Planet.
Yes.
And the way they showed them in each one of those phone booths, like kind of separated and spinning, and it kind of, because you know how you get when you get on a computer.
Yeah.
You get in a zone.
You get into a flow state.
And it kind of showed that aspect of getting into a zone. And nothing else around you existed, and you're just spinning there doing your thing. Now, the graphics they showed on the screens, ridiculous.
Oh, well.
The server room that they showed, ridiculous.
Absolutely.
They showed a server room with pillars of files illuminated, and it's just ridiculous.
Yeah.
No supercomputer ever looked like that, especially back then.
And yeah,
it was just a big empty room with racks in it.
Now, I can kind of see where they got the idea for that version of the visualization, like you said, with the racks of computers and the kind of like the data moving around and the lights flashing on the servers. I can kind of see where the idea for that came
from. I like how it visualizes what people imagine.
Yes.
I like that. But from a realistic standpoint,
it's
just ridiculous.
So far from the truth.
Even when they're sifting through the folders trying to find a file, it's just really.
Yeah. I wish it looked like that.
So I also wanted to ask you, what did you think about their computers?
Their computers.
Because those computers that they were showing there were advanced computers for the time.
Yeah. I remember being very little and having one of like those kiddie toy laptops.
Fisher-Price laptop.
Yeah, Fisher-Price laptop. And that's what they looked like.
Yeah, they did. But back then, they kind of were.
Well, yeah. And it makes sense. It makes sense because it's older technology. Right. It's going to be boxier.
Well, just like a cell phone back then was a brick.
Yeah.
So.
But I'm growing up in a very different age where like computers look like that and this
is computer
and payphones
don't exist,
barely exist, if at all. And like, I just have a level of appreciation for that age of computing.
I do too, because that's like when I started, there wasn't a whole lot of places that were networked.
Yeah, no.
And the school that I went to, we helped set up the network in the school for the computer systems class, which was cool because it gave us a good background in the mechanical hardware side of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then, but all of our network depended on a mainframe computer. So we had an IBM System 36. The System 36 was almost as big as this table.
Yeah.
Now we had the small towers actually it was the monitor, the big ass CRT monitors. And, you know, that's how we started. And we didn't see a color screen right away till a few years.
Yeah.
And you know, the interior internet.
Yeah. The intranet
was not a thing, and the internet itself was very, it was basically message boards.
Yeah.
So in 95, now it was beyond that then.
Mm-hmm.
But the message boards were still a thing. Websites weren't quite the same as they are now. I mean, nowhere near.
Oh yeah, no.
You didn't have the functionality that you have now. And what they were excited that they had a 28 KBS modem.
Yeah.
And that we're talking about modems like 100 times faster than that now.
Yeah, because if you have a KBS, if your modem is measured in KBS now.
Yeah, you would never load a page.
You know.
So, let me ask you, let's go to the characters. What do you think of the characters?
The characters were very, I liked the characters. Don't get me wrong. Do not get me wrong. I liked the characters, but to me, they seemed very, very typical of the era. However, some of those traits, I think, kind of do translate to now. Like, I could see some of the things they did, some of the ways they acted about stuff, definitely translates.
Well, you see, they were highly unsupervised.
Oh, well, yeah.
Which, and they were in New York City. And I'm going to mention something else that I love about seeing this movie, but they're in New York City and very unsupervised, which is kind of the way the Gen Xers were brought up. The boomers brought the Gen Xers up like that. Like, they were working, they were providing for the household. Your job is to come home and let yourself in the house, latchkey kids. So seeing that in the 90s, I don't know if it was as prevalent in the 90s as it was in the 70s and 80s, but you know, it was still there.
Yeah.
And it really highlighted the fact that, you know, single mothers and absentee parents, mm-hmm. As with the acid burn, her parents never saw her parents ever once.
Not once.
And they had a big party at her house and her parents weren't there and didn't seem like they were coming home anytime soon.
Yeah, no.
Like, for weeks. So that was, and there were some things in the movie that I saw that I really liked. I liked seeing the Jolt Cola.
Yeah.
Because that was a thing for us. The fact that a 16 or 17 year old kid was smoking like a chimney. Like, you couldn't show that in a movie now.
No. And I mean, even.
But back then, like, I started smoking cigarettes when I was like 12 years old. Ridiculous. But I was really cool. So I looked really cool doing it. Yeah.
But you don't have that now, at least not in any of my relative circles or any of the circles that I hovered around. It's just not a thing. And I think some of that's just because, well, I always talk about, like, as a kid, I just assumed if you drank before you were 21, you died or immediately went to prison because there were so many issues within the past. They are so overprotective about it now. Like, it was almost every other week that we were gathering in the auditorium or in one of our classes, we'd be watching an anti-drug, anti-smoking, drinking, whatever video.
You see, the anti-smoking thing wasn't really, like, when I started at Votech, we could still smoke outside Votech. If when we got there from our homeschool, mm-hmm. we could sit on the front steps and smoke. We didn't have to hide it. At our homeschool, we had to hide it, but there we didn't. Now, we couldn't smoke in the school, we couldn't smoke in class, but we were sitting outside the steps smoking.
And they just didn't care.
There was no rule against it.
Easy. To me, that's ludicrous.
Right. It is to me now, because looking back, I realize how stupid we were. But at the time, I was the coolest kid in the world because I had a cigarette. And you knew how to cup it to hide it. So the smoke would go up your sleeve instead of around your sleeve. And if you had a teacher watching, you could hold it and they wouldn't see it.
See, the thing now that I don't get is the vapes. That's the thing. I think that's kind of starting to die around in at least my area. Now, maybe it's not, and I'm just getting old. But,
you know it, kids.
But yeah, the vapes. It has a charm to some people. It just doesn't have a charm to me.
10-4. Good. Just say no.
Yeah, just say no.
So, like, the characters I thought were a little much in some spots.
Okay, yeah.
Who was Carlos? What was Carlos's handle?
Carlos.
The Spanish guy with the leopard print shirt and one of my favorite scenes is when he's having a dream that the FBI and the cops bust into his room and he wakes up and he's like, oh shit. And his mom comes in, he goes, oh, Carlos, it's time to get up, go to school, blah, 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 blah. And she goes to open the curtains and the FBI jumps in and busts in his room. And they're like, oh my God, what? She's like, what's going on? And they said, oh, your son's under arrest for this, 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 and this. And just like a Hispanic mother. She starts smacking him, and he's like, "What are you waiting for?
Arrest me already!"
I thought that was funny.
Because, that was funny
because in my area, that's how it was. You, if the cops brought you home, you would have wished the cops kept you.
If I were ever to get caught by the cops for anything in some twisted reality where I'm doing something that I'd get arrested for, if I get caught by the cops, I would never want to come home.
Well,
I mean, in fact, if I got caught by the cops, they would probably be, "It's okay, kid. Go home. We'll let your dad know you're coming."
Yeah, we'll call your dad.
No, please don't let me go home. Don't let me go home.
Throw me in jail.
Serial killer Emmanuel Goldstein, he was a little much too, but that's how he plays characters. But there was some funny stuff with that too.
Oh yeah.
Like after he was putting the bug on the telephone line under the desk.
Mm-hmm.
He pops up and he's walking away and he's like, his pants are falling down his ass crack is showing. That I just shit like that I thought was funny. The characters, I don't think they were built particularly well or written to particularly well, but they were entertaining.
They were entertaining. Like rewatching this movie made me realize almost all of our inside jokes at Votech. Almost all of our goofy inside jokes.
Yep.
Came from this movie.
Right, because this movie was iconic for its time for people like me. Like, it was a niche movie, I think, and that's why it didn't do as well in the box office as it could have.
Yeah.
Everybody still saw hackers as, like, complete criminals, and really what it is, the hackers were the rebels of the 90s, just like you had the hippies of the 60s.
Yeah.
They just
the new
believed
age.
In different things. So I'll ask you overall, putting everything together, what'd you think of the movie?
My honest opinion of the movie. It's a little bit aged, but it is still very, very entertaining.
So I think you're right. The technology does not hold up. It didn't hold up for the time. I think they tried too hard with the showing the technology and the visualization of the technology, but the visualization of the characters and the culture, I think they did a pretty good job of. And I've always loved this movie. It's not a great movie. If I was giving it a Barrel Age Flicks always does a critical score and a
okay
enjoyment score. If I was giving it a critical score, it'd probably be a 2. Critically, it's not particularly well written. It's very easy and tropey. It is what it is.
Yeah.
But entertainment wise, I'd give it almost a 4 because this is one of those movies, and everybody has them, that if I see it on, I want to watch it.
Yeah.
Just because it takes me back to a time other than being 52 years old. You know what I mean? And like I see that in you when you're on the computer with your friends. Like I see that.
Do you see it or do you hear me? Oh, come on.
Well, both. Both, but I was the same way playing video games. You can ask your mom and Lexi. When I would get on a video game, if I couldn't get through a spot, I was yelling just like that. So
I am very cutthroat. Everything is a competition. And I always win.
So overall, I enjoy the movie. I don't think it's a cinematic masterpiece of any caliber.
No.
But which character did you like the least?
Which character did I like the least? You know, that's a hard one because I really like them because they're all goofy and fun in their own way. Geez, you really had to give me such a hardball of a question.
But, like, well, okay, what was your favorite scene? How about that? Silence doesn't work well for radio.
The thing you should know, I think one of my favorite scenes has to be the scene where he's getting arrested. It's just...
Yeah, that's hilarious. To me, that's hilarious.
Very much so.
So I would think my least favorite character, and he's supposed to be, is Plague. I think it's poorly written. I don't think any corporate security officers have that much pull with the FBI.
Oh, yeah, no.
The FBI certainly wouldn't let him go in and question a teenage kid and smash his radio.
That's right. I always forget that. Like
why would they do that?
I always forget in that scene that he's not part of the FBI.
No, he's just a corporate kid. And he thinks he's like the best hacker in the world. And he's not.
No,
there's always someone better.
Always.
But I just didn't care for the character. You're not supposed to because he's the corporate bad guy.
Yeah.
Favorite character. I think Joey was one of my favorite characters.
Joey,
like, cause all he wanted was a handle. All he wanted was to be elite, like the rest of them. And like, he ended up being elite.
Oh yeah,
he ended up being the kid who actually got into the Gibson computer.
Yeah,
and he's the one who, once they were in there at the end, he's the one who made it all the way and got the file off the Gibson. So. And everybody else had been knocked off.
Except for him.
And he was still there going on, puffing on his cigarette.
Yeah.
Drinking his soda. I loved him when he was at the AA meeting.
About to say.
He's standing there puffing on a cigarette, drinking his coffee, puffing on a cigarette. Yeah, I'm not addicted at all. I don't need computers. Can I get some more coffee?
I don't know what you're talking about. I'm not an addict. I'm not. Hey, can I get on that quick?
Yeah. That was a funny scene too. So, I like the dance club.
I actually really liked the racing game. I don't know why.
Now you said that was based off a game. I don't remember that game.
I don't know. I feel like it reminds me of F-Zero for some reason.
I never played that.
I'll have to show you it sometime.
Okay. So, did you give me your overall?
My overall? You can see the age.
Oh, yeah, you did say it.
Yeah, okay.
So, okay, final question. Did you like the movie?
Yes.
Okay. And it's a movie. Now, obviously, you've watched it at least twice.
Yeah.
Would you watch it again?
Yes. If it was on, I would leave it on.
Okay. And a lot of these older movies, that's how I gauge them. Like, if I'm flipping through and it's on, is it interesting enough for me to watch it again?
Yeah.
And I enjoy this one because I don't have to think or feel anything. I could just sit there and look at nonsense.
Yeah. Like, there's a lot of those movies where you can just sit down and watch. Like, you have this one, you have Goonies.
Yep.
Like,
Goodfellas.
Waterboy.
Waterboy. Like, I could watch Waterboy almost anytime.
Oh my God. It's been so long since I've seen Waterboy.
Any of the, like, Tommy Boy, Black Sheep, any Chris Farley's movies.
Yeah.
I could watch him anytime. So that's
like, that success doesn't show right away, but I think that's how you know you made a good movie, when 20, 30, 40, 1,000 years from now, when it comes on, it's always a movie that you put down the remote and let play.
Well, for me, it's a nostalgia movie. Like some of the others.
Well, even I know me saying it's nostalgia.
Yeah, from 2 weeks ago.
But like that time in tech is when I met most of my best friends that I still have out of high school. And like at that time in tech, we were just on another level. We were just on a whole nother thinking plane. Like, I don't know what we were on. I don't know what they were putting in the air we were breathing, but we had to be on something. We had to be.
So, 1995 Hackers. If you haven't seen it and you could care less about computers, don't watch it.
Yeah.
If you're kind of a computer nerd like us, I think it's worth a watch. And you'll find it comical at spots when they're showing them navigating through the computer and downloading a file, and like that was the only thing that looked real is when it was downloading a file.
Yeah, when they actually
showing the file bar. And because that's how it was, you go to download something, it would take freaking forever because you're 28 kbs.
Yeah.
The hardware will make you laugh, and then their envisionment of what a server room would look like will make you laugh.
I thought it was funny how every time they were hacking into something, they were always talking to the security guy, and he had no idea the first thing about a computer. And they would always be like, oh, yeah, that box that lets my computer talk to your computer. And he'd always be like, oh, yeah, the inner talkie boxy thing.
Yeah, they I don't know how Acid Burn got on there, but like she's like, oh, you're on my turf.
Yeah.
But the other thing I love seeing in this movie was the Twin Towers, because it was filmed in New York. It was in 95. Twin Towers are still standing, and any movie that the Twin Towers are on, I love seeing them. And the movies that have gone back and taken them out, F you, I'm not watching you.
I like, even me as someone who only grew up, was born during the aftermath and grew up in an age without them, even I don't get the taking them out. We don't go back into movies and take out deceased actors or remove a car that's not manufactured. Like, I don't get the removing the Twin Towers.
I don't either. I never understood it. I forget what movie did it too, because it was a very popular movie, and when they show it on TV, they're not there, and I'm like, how the fuck?
Like, it's not like we're trying to pretend like it didn't happen, because every single year at school, on the day, on the hour, we do all kinds of stuff for it. So it's not like we're trying to forget it happened. So why are you removing it?
I know. I remember exactly where I was when the United States was attacked on 9/11. I know exactly where I was. I remember it clearly. It's the same thing I remember when the Challenger disaster happened. Because
I would have hated to be alive for that.
They wheeled TVs into all our rooms to watch a Challenger launch.
Mm-hmm.
And we all watched it blow up. Nowadays, they'd have counselors in the next day and safe spaces, and they'd have support groups for the kids. But they just, you know what they did for us?
Told you to get up and carry on.
They turned the TV off, wheeled it out, and started class again. That's what they did.
It's different.
It is. It's very different, but that's not what we're here to talk about.
Yeah, no.
We're here to wrap up our episode of Nerdcast on Hackers 1995. So if you were going to give it thumbs up, how many thumbs up would you give it?
I would give it 1/116.
Okay, 1.5. I'm 1.5. I love the movie, but there's some really ridiculous parts of it.
Yeah.
And the writing is not particularly good. But no. I still enjoy the movie every time it's on.
Mm-hmm.
So
certainly
that is Hackers 1995. We took on that. Now you go take on the world.
Hack the planet.
This podcast is part of the Deluxe Edition Network. To find other great shows on the network, head over to deluxeeditionnetwork.com. That's deluxeeditionnetwork.com.
Thank you.